We have audio from a discussion from Wayne Madsen of WayneMadsenReport.com. He spoke with the McClendon Study Group at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C. After his recent visit to Houston and attendance at last week's meeting of the Association for Intelligence Officers, he filed the following report. On July 25th, a Houston Chronicle headline in a meeting of the Association for Intelligence Officers in Dyson's Corner, Virginia, could not have offered up more divergent views on slain former CIA Houston Station Chief Roland Tony Carnaby. The Chronicle, a Hearthstone newspaper, announced no indictments and death of man claiming CIA ties. Meanwhile, Carnaby's former CIA colleagues were shedding light in Tyson's Corner on the man they knew either as Roland or just Tony. The Chronicle reported that a Harris County grand jury returned a no bill on two Houston police officers being investigated for shooting Carnaby on a busy street on April 29, 2008 in West Houston. The police claimed they shot Carnaby after a high-speed chase. The grand jury declined to indict officers Sergeant Andrew Washington and Cecil Foster for the shooting. Both officers are back on duty after a brief suspension after the incident. In addition, for the first time, Houston Police Chief Harold Hurt conceded that Carnaby may have, quote, been an informant for the FBI, according to FBI sources with whom Hurt spoke. Carnaby and Hurt were acquaintances through the activities of the Houston chapter of AFIO, which Carnaby headed. Wayne Madsen Report has learned that the city of Houston is quietly proposing an out-of-court settlement in the civil case being brought by Carnaby's widow against the city and police officers. Although CIA Director Michael Hayden issued an order that no current or former CIA employee is to discuss the Carnaby case or his role with the agency, Wayne Madsen Report has nevertheless learned more about the slain agent's work, both as an active agent and as a retiree on behalf of the CIA, from former colleagues who spoke off the record. One longtime CIA contractor attached to the Office of Technical Services, now retired, called the shooting of Carnaby, quote, an assassination pure and simple. And since then, Madsen has learned a lot more about this bizarre intelligence operation, and so let's go straight to the audio here.
Okay, thanks, John. I think there's another story here, along with what happened to this retired CIA agent named Roland that's going to be known to his friends as Tony. But also I have a couple other aliases I'll get to later. The other part of this story is that the government and the corporation are so close together now. Carnaby was shot on local television. They had two helicopters, news channel helicopters, above where the incident took place. He was shot by two Houston police officers. And this was in the middle of the morning rush hour on April 29th. And he disappeared, basically. This guy, Carnaby, it was seen on television, but he was not only killed in broad daylight, televised, but he has now been turned into basically a non-person. He's a guy who spent probably 30 years with the CIA. We don't really know because he was a clandestine services officer. But it goes to show that if they can do this to somebody who spent that long in the CIA, do it on television, televised, you can see the incident on YouTube.
They did it to a president.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that because when I was down there in Houston, a couple people said, isn't it outrageous that they could have done this to Carnaby in the middle of, you know, at the end of the morning rush hour in Houston? And I said, yeah, well, I remember they did it early afternoon to the President of the United States in Dallas. Another city in Texas. So, and that was, of course, not televised, but Mr. Zapruder did have one of his, I think it was a fellow now, a movie camera with him, and we all know about the Zapruder film. But a little background on Roland Carnaby. Roland Carnaby Chinese American, although you spelled his name, it sounded like the Irish spelling, C-A-R-N-A-B-Y. It was an Italian spelling, K-A-R-N-A-B-E. His father is a wealthy Lebanese shipping magnate, had served as Lebanon's ambassador in several countries, and is an asset for the CIA and has been for a number of years. Mark Guy Carnaby's family in Lebanon and has been very, very good to the CIA over the years. So we know that Carnaby, born in New York City, became associated with the CIA as an agent at a pretty young age, but not as young as he might when some people believe. The obituary listed Carnaby's age as 52, yet he, in college, claimed he was in Laos in the early 70s, working with people like Ted Shackley, who some of you may know by that name, and Richard Harding, and a few others. I'm sure everybody knows the name Richard Harding. So, figure in 52, I talked to one friend, I said, wait a minute, I looked at Carnaby's picture, it doesn't look 2 years younger than I do. And it turns out that wasn't his age, he was actually 61 or 62, which would have put him in the right age with his colleagues who were junior CIA officers in Southeast Asia in the early 70s. So Carnaby also later on was assigned to Lebanon, his native, his family's native country of Lebanon. He was in Beirut during the 1980s Civil War. He worked for the CIA station chief in Beirut. And some of you may remember the name William F. Buckley, not to be confused with the late National Review publisher, William F. Buckley was captured, taken hostage by a wing of Hezbollah, was tortured, and then was executed. Carnaby, after he retired, set up the Houston chapter of the Association for Intelligence Officers, APIO. Carnaby was the president of the chapter, the honorary president of the chapter, George H.W. Bush, and the chapter was named the William F. Buckley chapter of the Association for Intelligence Officers, named after his old boss. Turns out that Carnaby himself had been taken hostage for 3 days by Hezbollah, and due to some deals that Buckley made, Carnaby was released by his captors in some sort of a swap done with Hezbollah.
Was that actually Hezbollah at that time, or was it something else? Wasn't it?
It was Hezbollah, not the Hezbollah really we see today. As a matter of fact, I have an interesting story about one of the key members of Hezbollah, but there were also the Jihad, Islamic Jihad.
Right.
And then there was another Shia group called Amal, which was Nabi Berri, and of course. They were considered more moderate, although moderates in a civil war, you know, depends on what day it is, right? I mean, you're moderate one day to the next. But that was Carnaby's time where he really became well known in the CIA. The other thing I should mention, Carnaby spoke seven languages, and Arabic, not only Arabic fluently, but spoke the dialects of Arabic, so he could really blend in. And Jordanian Arabic, of course, Lebanese Arabic, Egyptian Arabic, and some of the other unique dialects of Arabic. He also spoke fluent Hebrew, French, and Italian, and of course English. Within the last 18 months to 2 years, he did retire. His last job with the CIA was the chief of station for the Southeast region, which is actually based in Houston. Not far, as you might, most many people think. some people said, well, wait a minute, what is the CIA doing with stations in the United States? Well, they always have had stations in the United States. And although things have changed after 9/11, where they now have a domestic role, prior to 9/11, they could explain that away because they recruit. They recruit from college campuses. So that's why they have stations. But stations are also recruiting centers for the Central Intelligence Agency.
Isn't it a problem with Domestic Collection Division or something like this?
Certainly after the 1970s for the oversight, they had to be a lot more careful about how they portrayed themselves domestically. But I do know that Carnegie had that role because I've been given the name of his immediate predecessor who had that job in Houston before he took it over. So still trying to get in touch with him. The interesting thing about covering this story is I spoke to CIA people who never spoke to a journalist in their entire career. Journalists to them are anathema. These were people who worked with people, as I mentioned, Shackley, Armitage, and other clandestine service officers. Some of them were quite familiar with another past clandestine service officer named Porter Boss, who later became a director and then was duly fired. And recently it was named by Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, and Minority Leader John Boehner as the co-chairman of the new Office on House Ethics, supposedly a citizens committee to look at ethically challenged members of the House of Representatives. Porter Goss, of course, the person who has been linked to the poker parties at the Watergate and the various other hotels in Washington and Charlotte, limousines and prostitutes are one of the ones that is now in charge of the House Ethics Committee.
So, real quick, Joe Kennedy in charge of the SEC.
Something like that. Anyway, back to Carnegie. Carnegie was shot to death by two Houston police officers on the morning of April 29th, at the very end of the morning rush hour, on the West Loop in Houston, in the Galleria section. Anyone who's been in Houston, been in that particular neighborhood, knows that that's not what you call a high crime area. That's where Neiman Marcus is, that's where the Galleria Mall is, that's where a lot of oil companies have their headquarters, that's where some federal agencies, including law enforcement agencies, also have their offices. And not too far away is the residence in Tanglewood of former President George H.W. Bush, probably less than a mile away from his residence this shooting took place. As I mentioned, Carnegie was a very good friend of George H.W. Bush. Apparently, Bush knew about his exploits in Lebanon when he was a clandestine services officer, and of course, when he went to Houston, you know, he basically was part of that old boy network that included George H.W. Bush, James Baker, and all the other guys. The way the press treated this was amazing because no sooner had Carnegie been declared dead. A little bit about the incident itself. The police stopped Carnegie's car after they said he was engaged in a high-speed chase. Now, if you've driven in the West Loop of Houston any time during the morning, especially on 610, you know it's darn near impossible to go as fast as the police said Carnegie was traveling. He had been coming in from the south of Houston. He maintained a residence in Pearland, but he didn't live there. His wife lived there. That's where a lot of the CIA mementos were, plaques, certificates, whatnot. But he didn't live there. But he was driving in. So we do know that the Brazoria County Sheriff did tip off the Houston police that he was on his way. Why? We don't know. Why did the sheriff tip them off? So they were basically waiting for him. Now, they said that they pulled him over because he was speeding. He showed them his CIA credentials after the incident. There was some question as to whether those credentials had been fake. Actually, he had the chief of police for the Houston and the homicide, chief of the homicide division, both saying that, you know, people have to stop publishing, and they, you know, they can make their own credentials. So immediately the word gets out that, you know, this car to be a fake. And this is what's put out by the media. This was put out by the city of Houston. This was put out by the police department. And as I'll mention later, this is also the rumor that's allowed to float by the CIA here in Langley itself. Carnaby's car is stopped a second time after they said they gave chase because they said they found out he had been carrying weapons, and he had a concealed permit, Texas concealed permit. When they stopped him the second time, they surrounded his vehicle. There's a cop on the passenger side who you clearly see is bashing the window in with a stick, and you can actually see that guy shoot Carnaby in the back as he's getting out of his vehicle. Now they said they shot him because he had been reaching down. They thought he was reaching for a weapon. Turns out he was reaching for his BlackBerry. He had been making several phone calls during the chase. He called the FBI in Houston, and he called the Internal Affairs of the Houston Police Department. I did find out that the FBI did call the Houston Police Department and asked them, please call off that chase. He's, you know, we can vouch for him. They ignored the request. There's another police officer who you can see coming around to the passenger side, and he takes out his weapon. It looks like he fires it. We don't know whether that hit Carnaby, but anyway, the bullet that hit him in the back was a fatal bullet. They handcuffed Carnaby. He was bleeding to death. They called the ambulance, and the ambulance took its time to get there. Instead of taking him to a closer hospital, they took him to a hospital that was farther away, and he was dead. He was dead on arrival. We don't know now if the two policemen, Officer Sergeant Washington and Officer Foster, were actually the two policemen seen in the video, because there was a civil lawsuit filed by Carnaby's widow against the city for wrongful death, and a federal judge, Judge Keith Ellison, not to be confused with the congressman from Minnesota, Judge Keith Ellison issued a preservation order for all evidence, everything that was in Carnaby's vehicle, the police dashboard camera, and those videos, audio of the calls to the police department, everything. And the Houston Police Department then proceeded to violate that preservation order and be disposed of all of this evidence, including the dashboard camera film. So that's where it stands now. There really isn't any way to prove what we actually saw on those videos from the helicopter. We don't know if those two guys were the two cops that actually shot Carnaby. What happened last Friday, there was a Harris County convened a grand jury. The grand jury came back with a no bill on indictments from the two police officers, Sergeant Washington and Officer Foster. So there will be no indictment for the killing of Carnaby. I understand the city is settling the civil suit out of court so that they can get rid of this whole thing, pay the widow off. The attorney that's this is kind of ironic. The attorney who's handling the suit for Carnaby's widow is the former head of the ACLU in Houston, and a lot of Carnaby's CIA colleagues find it very ironic that the person who is handling the case. Because Carnaby did not like the ACLU. Carnaby was a fairly conservative Republican person. I understand he did not like McCain, though, as a Republican nominee. I was told that he was a big fan of Ron Paul. But anyway, so we have the ACLU defending this, at least being the lawyer for the widow.
Do you know his name?
Yeah, Randall Kalinin is the attorney's name. Now, for the government, for the city of Houston, they'd like that to be the end of the story, but as Paul Harvey liked to say, now you're going to get the rest of the story. It doesn't end there. And this story has more, connections than you could imagine. Let's talk about some of the things, other things he did in the Middle East. They said he was very well connected. One of the things I found out from the CIA colleagues, he was very good friends with the Mendezes. If you read the book, this is the husband and wife team who were in charge of the disguises in the office of
technical
services at the CIA. They actually learned their trade from a lot of Hollywood makeup people, and they developed the disguises used by agents abroad. And one of the users, of course, of these disguises was none other than Carnaby. I was told one story. Carnaby was in Amman, Jordan. There was a particular residence he had staked out. Carnaby dressed up as a Jordanian street sweeper. Nobody's going to pay attention to Jordanian street sweeper. Spoke Arabic with the Jordanian dialect. Whoever he was monitoring, paid no attention. Of course, he was watching exactly who was coming and who was going at this particular meeting. And after that stakeout, two hours later, Carnaby is out of the Arab dress, and he's walking out of the Hotel Intercontinental in Amman with his blue blazer, his sunglasses, and his cigar, and, not the same guy. So this is the kind of work he did in the field. And for the CIA that later said, after the incident where he was shot, he didn't work for us, was, I think it's just a lot more than just the typical neither confirm or deny. It seemed that the CIA was really trying to go out of its way to play along with his some game in Houston about him being a possibly unpaid CIA agent. This is what was put out. One of the guys that went on TV locally was a guy named David Adler. David Adler was billed as a former case officer in the CIA. Some part of his friends say he's the one who has problems with his bona fides because we really think he's not for real, but be it as it may,
Adler represented.
You're jumping ahead.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, hold that thought. Yeah, you know where I'm going with that.
Okay.
Adler started to question the authenticity of some of the plaques and certificates that were shown to his crew inside Carnaby's home in Pearland. One thing Adler said, well, they spelled something wrong in one of the certificates. Wow, it's government. They spelled things wrong. Let's face it, And then he said, well, some of these don't look like they're authentic plaques. And he said, well, this isn't the way a CIA guy should operate. You don't give high-speed chases, You don't have guns in the car and this type of thing. And it turned out that Adler had a very interesting client in the past. And before I mention the name of that client, I want to tell you something else I found out. This gets to one of the areas John's interested in. It's very hard to say when you're a CIA clandestine officer and you're retired and you're still involved in certain things. What I do know is Carnaby was still under contract to the CIA and possibly some other agencies that he was involved in security for the port of Houston and the airport. And this going on. Is it sanctioned by Langley? Is it unsanctioned? Is it somewhere you're just trying to make some money? Or is it semi-sanctioned, which means, like, kind of like non-official cover, if you, a knock operation, you get captured, or you get, you know, the agency disavows all knowledge. I figured the way Langley reacted to the shooting, it was probably that in that category. That's just a guess on my part. One of the things I know is Carnegie was involved in an operation for what he's called the generals. Okay. That doesn't mean much. You know, what generals? But let's go back to Lebanon. And Carnegie was linked to every one of the various groups in Lebanon. Very close to General Michel Aoun, is called in Lebanon the general. If you go to Lebanon and you say the general, everyone knows you're talking about Michel Aoun. Michel Aoun used to be an ally of the Israelis back during the Civil War period when Carnegie was over there. Aoun is a Christian Maronite, but he was, a few years ago, he actually was here at the press club. He was brought here under the aegis of these neocon organizations that were looking for our guy, who can we have as our guy in Beirut? And they thought, hey, Aoun, he used to be an ally of the Israelis. He's a friend of ours, friend of the right wing in Lebanon, enemy of the Muslims, particularly the Palestinians, and particularly the Shias, friendlier with the Sunnis. So he comes over here. Well, something bad happens, because back in 2006, after Israel's sneak attack on Lebanon, and where they hit just about every part of that country, it didn't matter whether a Sunni neighborhood, a Shia neighborhood, or a Christian neighborhood, they pummeled that country. And, of course, Hezbollah handed it back to them with the Katusha rocket attacks on Israel, which got very deep into the country. After that attack, what does Aoun do? He agrees to a pact with Hassan Nasrallah, the head of Lebanon's Hezbollah. You know, the guy that Israel was wanting to get out of the picture, the guy we call terrorist. So this is done. This deal is done. So here our presumptive ally, the neocon darling, becomes the strategic partner of Nasrallah. Now, what does that have to do with Carnegie? Well, Carnegie obviously would have no great love for these people, because they were the people that held him hostage for 3 days, but also killed his boss, tortured and killed his boss, Buckley. But this is a different kind of Lebanon. If Aoun can make the deal, well, that means so obviously can some of the other Christian leaders. And somebody who is very, very close to Nasrallah and actually has tea with him quite regularly and lives about two doors down from him. And when I say doors, we're talking about palatial. This is Beirut. This is a wealthy part of Beirut. These are, I should say, two gates down from him. The person who lives two gates down from Nasrallah is Mansour Carnegie, the father of the slain CIA. He's still a big player. He's 82 years old. When his son was killed, the family, he and his wife, flew over to Houston immediately. They're Lebanese citizens, they're not Americans, so they have Lebanese passports. But their entry through the airport was expedited because George H.W. Bush sent his personal Secret Service detachment out to the airport that's named after him, George Bush International, to expedite the entry of the parents into the U.S. to attend the funeral and also take care of, you know, other business, which also included a two-hour meeting between Carnegie's father and the Harris County District Attorney, where he was told about the grand jury. But as I mentioned, the grand jury came back with a no indictment on the two police officers. So, you know, Michael Hayden, the director of the CIA, can say what he wants about, you know, he didn't work for us, or at least he had his press spokesman say that, but here's an agent who's very good friends with George H.W. Bush, a former director of the CIA, I might add, even though it was for 1 year they named the headquarters after it. Carnegie had a lot of contacts, and I was told recently that one of his last actions, and this was after he retired, he was still playing around with the agency. You may know, have heard about a guy named Imad Mughniya. Imad Mughniya was one of these old Hezbollah guys in Lebanon during the Civil War. He was the military commander of Hezbollah, who was in exile in Damascus, Syria. One of the problems that Israel has had with Syria is they say, you know, Syria provides sanctuary for Hamas and Hezbollah. Well, Mughniya lived in Damascus very comfortably, in a very nice neighborhood in Damascus. He was the military commander for Hezbollah, very much involved in not only the torture of Buckley, but also the kidnapping and torture of Colonel Higgins, who was a Marine Corps officer who was also brutally tortured and then executed by Hezbollah during that whole time frame. Also, was thought to have been responsible, at least partly, for the bombing of the Marine barracks in Beirut, which took over 200, the lives of over 200 Marines. So obviously not a great guy. A few months ago, early this year, Mumia left his place, got into his Mitsubishi, his driver, turned the ignition, and it exploded. Killed Mumia, killed the driver, created a large crater in that nice neighborhood in Damascus. What happened? Well, the Israelis said, we didn't do it. Heck, we don't care. I mean, we actually like the fact that this guy's gone, but, you know, the word hit the street, Mossad did it. Well, Mossad did not do it. We did it. But we did it with the assistance of Syrian military intelligence. President Assad, remember, one thing about Bashar Assad, the president of Syria, his father, Hafez Assad, was an ally of George H.W. Bush in Desert Storm when Bush was looking for coalitions. Here was Assad's father. 41 never forgot that. 41 does not like saber rattling between this administration and you know, threatening to war in Syria, helping Israel, you know, in attacks on Syria. That's a major difference between 41 and 43 on Syria. Now, Carnegie, things change. I mean, the shifting sands of the Middle East over the years, things change. Things certainly changed there. Asef Shawkat, the head of Syrian military intelligence, allowed this assassination to take place. I was told Carnegie was very, very instrumental in making sure that the logistics were just right to get Mughniya. The assassination was actually planned for February 9th of this year. It was planned to coincide with the birthday of Ronald Reagan, because Reagan was president when all this happened in Lebanon. Something happened where the seat with the bomb didn't get there in time, because they took Mughniya's car in for repairs, and they were supposed to swap the seat in then, and the seat hadn't arrived, the special seat. They had to wait. The assassination took place on February the 12th. Now, what happened, what was going on in Lebanon at the time, we have Aoun, with the deal he made with, Nasrallah, Hezbollah. This coalition was totally opposed to the Sinwar government, which was seen as a puppet government put together by the United States and Israel, had as one of its major supporters, Saad Hariri, the son of another guy who had been blown up, the former Lebanese Prime Minister, Rafik Hariri. Syria was blamed for that. There have been books written in Germany, and it's well known in the Middle East that Syria did not kill Hariri. Hariri was actually part of this operation to create a coalition with Hezbollah. He had been negotiating with Hezbollah, just like Aoun did. How we cut the deal, career, he didn't live long enough to do it, but it was the Mossad that took him out in a big explosion in Beirut. So we got Aoun, we got Nasrallah. Now, what does a coalition like that need against the Lebanese government? They need weapons. Where are they going to get those weapons? The United States is still the favored country to supply weapons. We are the biggest supplier of small arms in the world. We beat the Russians. We beat the Chinese. We are the number one supplier of small arms. But, you know, the way the United States is, with the Second Amendment, it's easy to get this stuff. So when Carnegie said, we got to support the generals, it's clear from what I recently discovered is there was a major arms shipment taking place to supply at least Aoun, but Aoun's alliance with Nasrallah would mean that potentially Hezbollah would also share in that operation. This also could have netted Carnegie quite a bit of money and its associates. Now, let's get back to it. Okay, that guy David Adler. The guy David Adler who was on TV saying, this guy isn't real. You know, look, there's something wrong with the misspelling. David Adler was the lawyer for a guy named Ed Wilson. Edwin Wilson, who was sentenced to prison. I think the original sentence was 54 years.
At least.
Yeah. Well, they threw the key web at that. He sent him to the Supermax. Wilson was accused of selling weapons to Muammar Gaddafi in Libya back in the...
Explosives.
And explosives, right. Explosives. And it was in the early 70s when it took place. Wilson left the CIA, retired, very similar to Carnegie, retired when, about 1972, I think. They indicted him in the early 80s, and Adler was his attorney who later got him out because there was a technicality where there was perjured testimony by one of the witnesses.
The Justice Department.
Yes.
Well,
so maybe that was the
CIA, but the prosecutors knew that the
right. It was perjured testimony. He did 22 years and was released. The deal on shipping the explosives and the materials was in Houston. It was a Houston judge who ordered him released.
Well, and the significance is that the CIA disavowed any, similar to Carnegie, any connection.
Exactly. It's a carbon copy.
Right.
And I think of course later, Wilson was providing this to Gaddafi with the sanction of the CIA. They just washed their hands of it. Semi-sanctioned, who knows? Sanctions not. Probably semi-sanctioned. But definitely people in the CIA knew what Wilson was doing. And I would just say, in this case, Lebanon for Libya, Carnegie for Wilson, and you basically probably got what this was all about. Does that mean you kill somebody on the street? No. And now you got to look at motive. Who had the motive to do this? Well, there's a very interesting thing that happened the night before Carnegie was shot. Carnegie and some friends of his went to a restaurant in Houston called the Capitol Grill, same one that owns this one down here. It's where all the movers and shakers, you know, the oil guys, the local politicos all hang out in this place. A guy approached Carnegie and his party with one of these to-go bags. To go work. And he had it open. And he acted like he was drunk. He approaches Carnegie and he says, You gotta look what's in here. And of course Carnegie's like, I don't know you, sir. I've never met you before. He says, no, you gotta look. And his friend said he immediately reached in. Carnegie reached in here. You know, he was grabbing his concealed weapon. Very nervous. Then the guy apologized, left the restaurant. And they noticed he got into a vehicle with diplomatic plates. Well, there's only a few places in Houston that have diplomatic plated vehicles. It's not like Washington, D.C., where we got, 180-some embassies and whatnot here in missions. The guy was from the Israeli consulate general. Well, as Lonists. Weapons deal for Hezbollah, enemies enemies of the Sonora government, which is backed by the neocons and the Israelis. And here you got the key guy involved in the deal. So instead of what they did to Wilson, because they probably learned their lesson with Wilson, and the guy got out there for 22 years, and apparently he's supposedly writing his book, but I hear people are having trouble, you know, working with the guy. He's talked to a couple of ghostwriters, and many of them have walked away because he's got a bad attitude. I guess you would after 22 years in prison, you know, for Max. Some of these guys aren't sympathetic figures. So they nail Carnegie, so they avoid any kind of trial or anything else. So that's where it stands now. Carnegie is basically been wiped clean from the books of the CIA. As far as the Houston Chronicle is concerned, he's still a potential fake. That's the way they Carnegie said it. The two cops who killed a man who claimed he was a CIA agent. That was the headline last Friday in the Houston Chronicle. The Houston Chronicle reporter assigned to the cover the story, Mike Tolson, apparently had a long history of this kind of stuff. And you go to any city, major newspaper, you always find one of these characters who will carry the water for the police department or the city. And it's certainly no exception with the case of Carnegie and the Houston Chronicle. Houston Chronicle is a Hearthstone newspaper. But anyway, Tassie here would accompany me to Houston on my first trip because that was a tough story to get my hands around. And we both have a background in the various intelligence agencies. So I'm probably forgetting some. She can help fill in the blanks.
She's a bodyguard.
No, she wasn't. Well, first question. You know what? She had to know where to send my body.
You said he was stopped twice.
Yeah.
As far as you know, did he flee the scene of the first stop?
That's what the police will say, but it's not really what the record shows. They stopped him the first time for speeding.
Right.
He shows them his credentials, CIA credentials, you know, like a professional courtesy deal. They let him go.
One of the captains, I don't remember the name of the captain, said that the order was given to find something to hold him.
That's right.
They wanted the computer.
They were given an order, get him on anything, but get him.
After the first stop,
they
phone it in and they get a thing back.
Right.
No, we need to get that.
Yeah. All right. Get him on anything. You know, get him for jaywalking. You know, get him just. And the reason they did that, they wanted. What do you have in his car? Oh yeah, let me. He had several things in his car. Remember, I told you he was involved with the security for the Port of Houston and the airport. He had several cell phones. One was a Bang & Olufsen. Then there was an iPhone. He had an iPhone. He had his BlackBerry. He had a Macintosh laptop. And they wanted, obviously, somebody wanted that information on it. What he used all these cell phones for is quite interesting. I was told what he could do is he could dial cameras in and around the Port of Houston, dial in the cameras and turn them on with the cell phone, leave them on, then dial them back, download the video or the still or movie video to the cell phone, and then put that into the Macintosh. So he did have several do business as entities in Houston. American Global Security was one. We don't know yet whether that was a knock or not, a non-official cover like Brewster Jennings, the Mallard plane situation. Another one was Carnegie Shipping. Remember, his father was a shipping magnate. Carnegie Shipping. He also had National Security Command Center. That's the vehicle. The vehicle he had. That's who it was registered to. So at least three pet firms.
Has there been a report?
No, that's just that was
the name.
National Security Command Center. Yeah. Johnny He also had two mail. He had two mailboxes at a UPS store in Houston. One was for Accio business. It was the Accio mailbox. The other one was for Carnaby Shipping. Now it's quite interesting that particular UPS store. The place above it is called Braun Property Management, and BRAUN. And when you check that out, the proprietor of that company arrived from Tel Aviv in 1971 in the Houston area. He's been here ever since. Now his son helps him operate. They own warehouses and facilities all around Houston, including in the port. I was told Carnaby also ran a warehouse in the port. So he was quite concerned about, now this is about what he was doing officially. I talked about the possible semi-official or unofficial business. He was very worried about the Port of Houston being targeted in a in another type 9/11 type situation. He was particularly concerned about Memorial Day, this past Memorial Day and the 4th of July. He said they were red letter days for him. He constantly bickered. He was with the Counterterrorism Center. He met with them quite frequently. That's the FBI group, Counterterrorism Task Force. Every city has one. Brings in the CIA, FBI, Secret Service, Customs.
That was why during the chase he called the FBI.
Yeah, he called the FBI, and they did try to help him, but the Houston police refused him. They would meet at a SCIF, a Sensitive Compartmented Information Facility. The only one where they could meet with get that many people inside a SCIF was at the Johnson Space Center. That's where they had that. And he constantly bickered with Homeland Security. He was not a fan of Michael Chertoff by any stretch. He thought that Homeland Security was not doing enough to protect the port. There had been a contract let to a company called Trident Hudson, and originally part of that contract was in the hands of a guy named Tim Spicer. Some of you may remember who he is. He's a British mercenary. He was with Executive Outcomes in Africa. Sandline was arrested in Papua New Guinea for trying to overthrow the government. Now he's got Aegis Defense here. It's a major defense contractor. It was some of those clowns that were. He saw a video of them shooting civilian vehicles on one of the highways in Baghdad. He was opening fire on taxi cabs and other civilian vehicles, killing the occupants. But he got thrown out. Spicer got thrown out of that contract. But one of the things Carnaby was, he says, well, in a port, you can't put a lot of physical security controls. You've got to have stuff coming in at any time. But he worked for human intelligence assets in, like, the local, you know, job halls, the union halls, where the stevedores are, and just pick up what's going on. You know, people speak the language, foreign language. A lot of these guys are foreigners. So Homeland Security did not want to do that. And it became quite clear that there's a lot of stuff going on in the Port of Houston. And obviously, some people in Homeland Security and Carnaby's Israeli friends probably did not want a bunch of human intelligence assets, you know, finding out what they're up to. Carnaby maintained a relationship with the Israelis because he allowed many Israeli companies to come in and brief the airports and the port. They have a lot of security products that they sell, and he facilitated a lot of that. He was also very close to the Helfman family of Houston, which is the Chrysler dealership. They're very big in United Jewish Appeal and whatnot. He counted Alan Helfman and his father, who owned a big auto dealership, were very close friends. But he did say, he said, when it comes to Israel, they asked him, why do you keep these close relationships with them? He says, I keep my friends close and my enemies closer. That was something he said.
Second question, when you said earlier that you had some CIA agents that was talking, the first time they ever talked to reporters, is the implication there that these agents are angry about this?
Yeah, they're with it. As a matter of fact, the Matthew colleagues, they termed it an assassination. that's the way they're called, that's what they're calling it. He said it's an assassination. It's not a, it's not an accidental shooting. And they're extremely upset. As I mentioned, I spoke to people who would have never spoken to a journalist. I mean, you're talking about guys go back to Shackley, and, you know, if one goes, you know, these are the guys that, you know, were responsible for some of the worst, talk about assassination, foreign leaders. But they, because they saw it happen to one of their own, it's amazing when you see it happen to one of your own, and then you see how they just take this guy who they knew and worked with and make him a non-entity. It's sort of like the Soviet Union do, they make people non-persons. They saw it happen to their friend and colleague, and of course that gets them to open up and gets their jaws lubricated.
Are any of them going to allow a name to be used in the story?
No. They're not that.
They're not that liberal. We all know they're afraid. I'll tell you. Well, they're also afraid that they could wind up like a...
Are you
going to
be able to use them as an
extort?
High level. Yes.
Do you need me to
sort of stuff out there and
make your memory
things
that...
Yeah.
Stuff out? Okay, question here.
Okay, yeah.
Well, because I'm saying amazingly courageous work.
We should not be sitting so close to you.
Yeah,
we should move just a little bit.
Very important, very well told. But, three quick questions. Are these videos that you mentioned available, or have they, the TV videos? And then here's my two other questions. Have you ever told this story before? And quite this. I know you haven't watched quite this full version. Three, what's a larger venue than even the Condon? Anyway, video, you know, you told it, and what's next?
Well, the videos were put out on the KHOU and one of the networks and the NBC affiliate. HOU is the CBS and the NBC. And I think they're still available on YouTube. I don't put that, but you know, all you gotta do is look at Carnegie. Even if they're not, somebody else should probably grab those videos and re-release them on YouTube. As far as
I know you've told the story in a serial fashion on your website, but have you put it together in a radio show? I mean, this was incredible. Pulling it together in a lot of different things.
Well, I've talked about it on a few interviews, not in any detail. Of course, this past Friday, I attended the Accio meeting out here in Tyson's Corner, where, you know, these were the guys who Carnegie worked with out of Langley. And it was very interesting when I saw, it's clear that Langley put out the word, because this is similar to, like, and they don't want to go through that again. Seems anybody with the last name Wilson does. Seems like that's a fair
name. Can you about the video?
Yeah.
In response to what
you
said. There is the video still up on YouTube, but the one that was taken from the news helicopter, but it's really short. I think it lasts for about 5 seconds because the news station didn't release their entire footage of the chase beforehand. What they released, what's actually out there on the internet is the news. The news is like 5-6 minutes, I mean, some 30-second shot of him getting shot. And when you watch that short time frame, Colleen and his attorney had told us that he had showed that to a retired sheriff from Los Angeles County to get his take on that. And he said that. The way that they approached the vehicle, the way that all the cops got out and started running towards it, that means that they weren't scared of him. They knew that he wasn't drunk because they were scared. Their police academy and subsequent training taught them to surround the vehicle and open their doors, take cover, and aim your weapon, and either use a loudspeaker or something to dictate orders with your hands up to do that. They didn't do that. They ran straight from the vehicle and started breaking open windows. And he said that he had never seen that happen before.
That aside, do we know specifically what
officers were told after the first stop, what was the order given to them? It is technically supposed to be on record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the department, have you reviewed it? You
know, no, the record.
It's the story. It's story. Everything.
The story stuff is all we know. They could have, somebody, the defender could have told them, wait a minute, the person you have is such and such and such and such, armed and dangerous,
yeah,
opposed to the caution of what?
Yeah,
they could have told them anything.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's probably what happened. If, in fact, these were the two guys, officers Washington and Foster were the two guys that actually were the two guys we saw.
Which, if you're implying, well, we don't think officers let us fool up.
There were, in the video, there's a lot of undercover unmarked vehicles, which is weird for a police chase. So he's surrounded by unmarked cars.
There were also unmarked cars there. There were also, it looked like, apparently in his vehicle, there were bullet holes in the back of the vehicle, which indicated that during the chase, they were firing.
Firing from the rear.
How
did the Rivier run book reports, how did they get destroyed? That would have to be a very selective process.
Yeah, I mean, this is right, and I mean, the most outrageous thing is that there was a federal judge's preservation order violated by the police. I mean, one of his colleagues said, since when did Houston become independent of the United States? This is a federal judge. And, there's a lot of problems with this whole case. You've got to claim that a former clandestine service guy is working in a classified environment anyway, which makes it, you know, that much more difficult to try to give any information. But, I talked to a couple of his colleagues who worked with him, both when he was on active and retired status, and they're actually afraid that they could be taken out the same way.
Well, Wayne, what's the next venue?
I'm not sure there is another venue. I'm going to keep at it. You know, I think I've reached a plateau of information. Unless there's another smoking gun, no pun intended.
Are the Apio people going to do anything?
Yeah, that's interesting. Apio, I spoke to the guy who's the president of the national Apio, and he said, look, as far as I'm concerned, you know, he did good stuff for, he did good things for us. He was one of our best members. Wouldn't really go into the CIA past, but others who I spoke to said, he was one of our top guys. I mentioned the thing with the disguises, with the Mendezes. He also was apparently very good friends with George Tenet. Tenet apparently, this kind of gets to your question. CBS 48 Hours was looking into the story. They sent a crew down to Houston. They also interviewed George Tenet. George Tenet, the interview, I guess this should have come as any shots. George Tenet said he never heard of the guy.
Hey, how about Dan Rutter?
I have two more things that are out there. One of the things that was really interesting is that right after the shooting occurred, and it was announced that the CIA had in fact showed up to verify his credentials, they actually knew that he was in fact a CIA agent, at least a former one. However, they were more interested in the computer. But what we did find out from law enforcement inside the Houston Police Department is that the Secret Service showed up first and grabbed the computer. So why was the Secret Service interested in the computer?
Well, that's how they never show up, too.
Mm-hmm.
And how did they never show up, too?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They got there before the CIA did.
There's nothing unusual about the CIA denying the scope of involvement with a past or present. A lot of times, you know, we know they do this, we know that sometimes it's even built into this arrangement, meaning, look, that's unusual. To your knowledge, Wayne, has any CIA agents or significant agents out there ever been killed in a police shootout in 1974?
I've never heard of one.
I asked some of his colleagues, you ever seen anything like this before? Yeah, overseas, in hospital environment. But this used to the hospital environment, especially when you're that close, the big question is, we always heard that Bush 41 owns Houston. But what does this mean? Does this mean that, I understand he's livid about this, what happened to Carney. But what's he going to do? What can he do? Or has he lost control over the city that he thought he had in his pocket for so long?
In the past 30 seconds to 60 seconds, I'm not sure that what other people and you today doesn't contradict exactly what the discussion is saying, namely that Bush 41 is livid about this. Of course he's going to put out the line that he's livid about this, but if it was the Secret Service that was the first to show up and snag the computers, of course the Secret Service is a little bit more connected to Danny Bush's board doors.
Well, also part of Homeland Security is part of the tangle with, many, many times on professional security issues in Houston. So,
you could be grabbing the computer for various reasons because you want to protect his operation.
And then
they were part of the operation.
Yeah.
Can I just talk about it's really a fascinating story. It's the first time I've heard of it. On the political context of what's going on, because I think it fits into it a lot. I mean, there's really momentous changes going on right now in the Middle East, and there's huge brawls that everyone knows within the administration and the Cheney group, and really the Bush 41 crowd, and probably Rice tends to lean toward Scowcroft, those people. But the settlement, I mean, the killing of Bonilla was, and some people see that as sort of a clearing of the decks, which opened the way for the peace talks between Israel and Syria, which have been mediated by Turkey.
And it's quite possible that even Nasrallah gave a wink in the night to getting rid of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
The problem from the past.
Because he was, he was closely tied to Iran.
Yes.
He did have all this baggage from the past. And getting him out of the way did help clear things up. The events in Lebanon, I mean, which was huge, after this little incident in the streets about 2 months ago, when Nasrallah showed that the government, having been armed heavily and trained in everything by the U.S., what they call the internal security forces, they just collapsed. So that this government turned out to be nothing, that the neocons here were banking everything on.
Yes, the Cedar Revolution.
And then they went ahead and did this Doha Agreement, where they formed a government with Hezbollah as part of the government, which is driving the Cheney group and the neocons, you're crazy. Because these are supposed to be the big enemy. You never talk to these people. And now they're part of actually stabilizing the situation. Now, the Israeli-Syria thing is part of the same thing. But there's big fights within Israel over there. So, I mean, what you're describing, it would be consistent because the Bush 41 group is in favor of these stabilizing efforts. And a lot of the stuff that's going on in the region with the role that what Syria is doing, what Mubarak and Egypt are doing, others, is because they see this administration as so crazy. Right. They're saying, we've got to take this into our own hands and try and calm things down. Because these guys are going to blow up the whole region and the whole world. And so, I mean, what you've described is what Carnegie was involved in.
Yeah.
Is consistent with the people who were trying to actually stabilize.
Yeah, not at a high level, but definitely was there in the middle.
Yeah,
the middle layer. Arranging secret arms people with at least with that wound.
And then you do have the Cheney groups and the neocons and the Netanyahu group in Israel.
Right.
We're totally opposed to this.
Yeah.
So it's really,
something John Fye wants me to mention is the firm, the company they were using, he was using to get these arms. Of course, like many of these companies, but it deals with Fabrique Nationale. It also deals with InterArms, right down here in Alexandria. Another company that we've looked at, Dakota Arms, which is out of near Sturgis, South Dakota, which is so a lot of these, Indian reservation places and all this kind of stuff. Obviously, it lends itself to this kind of covert plan after that. You asked, yes, Mother.
Yeah, I just wanted to add something, and that was I didn't want it I didn't want his the motive for the shooting to only be wrapped around the arms deal that was going to take place. But it was a very complicated story to investigate because he was really involved in so many different things. And one of the things that he was involved in really was the security of the Port of Houston and the airport. And other than just having his own companies down there, there was a bar and a restaurant that that was there at the port, at the dock, that he frequented. And he would also, he would just hang out in the back and smoke his cigars and stay very late. He was well known. But when he was with someone that knew him very well, and he was having a phone call. She doesn't know with whom, but it was very uncharacteristic for him to start yelling who gave that order. And he caused a scene in the back of the restaurant. They came to check on him. And she said that before he was killed, he was very, very nervous. And she had told that he was, even though he himself was very conservative, this person said that she had noticed a change in his demeanor. And he said that he was scared for the country, and he really was scared of some terrorist attacks happening at the Port of Houston on the 4th of July and at another time. Memorial Day. And so it's quite possible that he had stopped a terrorist attack, and that the reason that he was shot in the open was as a warning. That was considered too.
You said arms deal. Let's go back to that.
Mm-hmm.
Arms deal or alleged arms deal? How sure are you that there is an arms deal going on?
Well, I've talked to people who actually have looked at some of his records because not all of his phones were captured or by the police department. So there's some other phones out there. And I recollect, you know, when he recollected and looked at the calls, many calls involving a major, an owner of a major arms company, small arms company in the Houston area, who was a business partner.
Mm-hmm.
So let's turn this around for a second. Take it as that. You're intimating an arms deal. Fine.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a guy here who is involved in port security, knows the situation, even has the ability to turn off cameras and download them.
Right.
He also has his own warehouse.
Yes.
And he's got connections with people.
Yes.
And he's former CIA. Is this not someone who is in an absolutely perfect position to move arms in and out of the port?
Absolutely.
Houston, and is it likely that those ceilings would not be legal and that they would not even be sanctioned by the United States?
Yeah. Well, I
know
in the United States.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Wilson, they said he did it on his own. He was never a CIA agent, and they threw him in jail for 54 years. He got out after 22. But we found out that he was sanctioned.
The way he did it, I think the motive of the story was he was doing Freedom of Information Act requests, and they distractedly did a whole series of these things because the agency said we had no contact. They said unequivocally we had no contact with him after 1972.
Yeah. Okay.
And so he did this and eventually got records showing meetings he had had, briefings and debriefings and stuff, you know, going from up to the...
McCartney were around to do FOIA.
Right.
They say we had indicted him. He could have come up with the meetings at the Space Center and the SCIF. We had to explain that. The guy from Tony.
Yeah, we're not...
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm going to say this. Yeah,
just bring up another important point.
There are 1,000 ways to kill a guy. And if he irritated the CIA, well, the best people are available.
Well, killing a guy by using the Houston police, not a very, what I would consider, surefire way, a little messy, a little awkward.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that this guy is someone who is involved in some heavy stuff, possibly illegal, possibly embarrassing? He gets stopped. He's uptight, he's stressed out,
he
acts a little weird. They let him go, then they get a call back saying, oh, this guy's wild, this guy, this, you gotta stop him. And these guys get a little twitchy to go in and they simply kill them, shut him out, but there's no conspiracy with it.
That's a potential scenario.
But if they were scared of him, they still wouldn't have gone for the car the way they did.
That's a valid point. I mean, you need to know about that. But without knowing exactly what their instructions were, what was going on,
mm-hmm.
clearly the American told, okay, he's not that dangerous, but he could be, all right? They would know he had an arms, he had the right to carry. So that means he could be armed. So, and then he reaches for the BlackBerry. I mean, you know, that happens all the time.
And you can't,
I'm just saying that one of the problems here is if you go to the store and try to bring the Houston police in mm-hmm. and the assassin arm, well, that's a real killer fish. Mm-hmm. Plus, it completely diverts away from what may be really happening here is that the act of having him killed highlights something else going on. It might have been pretty crazy and never would have known about had he not been, quote, killed.
Let me tell you about the assassination. The people who are charging assassination are a CIA counselor. In addition, his lawyer was general counsel for the House Select Committee on Assassination in 1978. So he, you know, he's pretty much an expert in political assassinations, having looked at the King Jack Kennedy's assassination. So, I mean, these are not like wild speculation.
Right, absolutely.
And there's a couple other things. The thing about him, you know, when he pulled up on the phone and he said, who gave that order? But he also, a couple other things, he said, he's very much opposed to the U.S. attack on Iran. He said, I fear for my country if that happens. Another thing he said, I really am disgusted. He was talking about one of the detainees in Iraq. This is disgusting how we treat a longtime CIA asset. When I asked him, he was talking about Turkey. The answer was Tariq Aziz.
Meaning that they don't do something like that. if there, in fact, is some fairly obvious information that connects him to the CIA and to other agents that you were easily able to find, but the CIA went ahead and, quote, took that position, if they had to have a reason for that, have you thought much about what would be the basis for that?
If it wasn't similar to a Wilson, Ed Wilson deal, you know that Hayden don't want this on his watch. He's already got it on scandals. He's got scandals going back to when he was at NSA, missing some intercepts, the day before 9/11, for example. So he doesn't, he's one of these guys, he's a professional pencil sharpener. He doesn't want anything happening on his watch. Although a lot has. But, the one that really rattled her cages was, E.C. Madden, which is a different story. But, she, of course, the Carnegie, shot on April 29th, and then on May 1st, Jean Palfrey was found hanging from, her mother's shed down in Tarpon Springs. Far not to suggest there's a connection, but I did talk to some of Carnegie's colleagues about Jean Palfrey, and they almost unanimously said, there's no way. That was a suicide.
I think that issue was that long.
Yeah, really.
Given that not only the media will tell the truth about this story, given that the order to stop again came from deep inside the police department there, and given that Danny Bush, as you say, runs Houston, how can you possibly say that Danny Bush is pissed off about this? If he gets pissed off about it, then he used the media or not.
Well, there's some question as to Danny Bush's mental acuity. Several people said he is now probably more than the initial stages of Alzheimer's. But, how much can he get involved? He knows about this guy. He knew this guy Carnegie, but, what is he able to do, if he's starting to
lose it? What I'm saying is you can't really be sure that he's that pissed off. Otherwise, somebody would be doing something about the story other than you.
I don't think so. No, I don't agree.
Well,
because it opens up too many other doors. The principle of getting this stuff through the Port of Houston is they were known just not to touch it. You just have to be pissed off and silent. He's former intel. He would know that.
Is the Port of Houston, securing the Port of Houston, greater than
other ports? No. As a matter of fact, I went to the main gate at the port with one of Carnegie's old colleagues who just flashed a credential with a badge on it, but they didn't ask to examine was. I was driving a rental car, so I got through it. We got through it. He said, congratulations, you're now an honorary terrorist.
Do you know roughly what percent of the containers coming into that port? Do you know what percent of the containers?
It's the largest import facility in the United States.
And what percentage of the containers are they checking there?
They do. I did notice in these units they have at the port, which check for radiological, only radiological. No bio.
All containers are checked.
No, it's a spot check thing. I saw some of them go through rather rapidly. Remember, again, time is of the essence. That's why actually Carnegie did not favor this physical security approach. He said you have to do it through human. I mean, they've got to have a little bit of that thing. But he really wanted to put the emphasis on human. He wanted to put, Arabic and Tagalog-speaking agents in the union halls and in the bars and just pick up what these crews, in Philippines.
How many Tagalog agents do you think are available right now?
That's true, you can. Well, that's the problem. They say they can't find people in the intelligence community. They're obviously not looking very hard. It's not rocket science to go figure out where to get these people.
Well, good stuff. I hate to see this die on him. I might go somewhere and get some serious national attention.
Well, right. this, like many other stories, you know, you look at them and then you just, you know, I mean, obviously I'm still in touch with his colleagues. They're not going to let it go. FDO's not going to let it go. I mean, but, you know, there's only so much they can do because, you know, FDO is the Association for Intelligence Officers. I mean, I was at their thing out in Titans Corner Friday. Who's sitting at the next table? General Singloff. I mean, you talk about going back then. I mean, I didn't even know he was still alive. Singloff, for those of you who don't know, was part of this whole Iran-Contra thing. He was fired by President Carter. He was the second U.S. military commander in Korea fired by a president because he didn't realize that the commander-in-chief is the guy that gives the orders. The first one being Douglas MacArthur, fired by Harry Truman. The second one being General Singloff, who was fired by Jimmy Carter, because he disagreed with Carter, which all was the truth, but he got involved with all this stuff, right? I mean, Singloff was with Oliver North and sure. this whole Iran-Contra nonsense.
But what Kathy says is true. I mean, assuming what you were told is true, that he was involved in this stuff, the people running the operation aren't going to want it blown either.
No.
You know, and the people are saying, oh, you want to go public with this? Okay, we'll go public with it. You want to have, you know, the assassination, the arms and stuff like that is too sticky for anyone to really, you know, that's when things end up being covered up.
The other way.
No one can afford to have a trial.
When he blew up, no pun intended, on the phone, so who gave that order? That was about the time frame, something that happened, that was going to happen on April 25th in Beirut.
Oh, yeah.
And this leaked out of the Prime Minister of Israel's office. Olmert's office, by the way, resigned this evening. Right now he's resigning. Stepping down as the head of the Kadena Party. It was leaked that there was a planned assassination by a car bomb of Nasrallah in Beirut, but it was called off because it was leaked. Now, who conveyed that to Hezbollah, who had the links in with Mossad? One of the things I obtained, Carnegie had a certificate of appreciation to him from Mossad, but it was clear when I looked at this thing that this was fake. This was fake. Now, the question is, who was he trying to impress? Obviously, you wouldn't be trying to impress Mossad with something like that. They don't give out certificates on call. they have other ways to show their appreciation. Not through a certificate. As dumb as we are, we give out certificates for it. We don't want to get a certificate from Mossad.
The online Mossad agent that you were down here knows the details.
Yeah. Taffy.
Are you from Houston?
No, I'm from the area.
Oh, you just work at White there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
I used to be in an intelligence community, too. So.
Used to be?
Mm-hmm.
Did you die here every day?
No.
Well, at least when you squirt some points to some intelligence guy, that could pay off.
Yeah, I mean, I have to say, most of them were, they want to get to the bottom of this, too. And, you know, frankly, you know, when they start looking in, for some of his activities, you know, when he got started with weapons stuff, he changed pieces, you know. We don't know where this is going, but it's all looking real good.
How public was his involvement in Algeria, in Syria? In other words, how many people knew about that?
Very few.
I didn't think so.
Yeah.
Given what you told me, nobody really knows exactly why he was hit, but it appears very definitely that this was the hit.
Who? Carnegie or McGee?
Carnegie.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it was a hit.
Yeah, okay. And, I mean, I was familiar with some of the intel around the time of the Libya, and I know how much people wanted to pin on this group or that group or whatever or whatnot. And it is pretty clear that Carnegie knew exactly what happened because he was involved. Then that may be one of the reasons.
All kinds of scenarios why they hit him, you know. I mean, there's a lot of motives. Certainly there's a lot of motives.
Yeah,
the problem is, you know, who did it? Because
it had to be somebody with connections to the police department.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's a cover it up. And did this destroy the evidence against the orders of the federal judge and with impunity.
There was a homicide detective on the case whose name I was given as somebody who might have talked, but apparently he decided he didn't want to do that.
I'm still thinking along the lines of Gary Conner. Gary Conner was a congressman who was having an affair with a young government murderer like the rest of the House of Representatives. Unfortunately, he gets murdered in the park, and suddenly real, stuff happens. There it is. So he has
everybody out there.
You take any agent, any significantly active agent in the work of the CIA, were to get murdered in a public fashion, they'd have pretty much the same problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That ain't good. We don't want our former agents to ever get in a public arena like that, and everybody's got to start acting strange.
And they are.
But it's important to still look at these things carefully, just in case, because you never know.
What we determined was that they were actually looking at that they were planning ahead of time to take him out with the disinformation campaign on the internet. It wasn't just the Houston Chronicle that wrote these really outrageous articles. But I did a lot of research going through the internet. There's this. Can I bring him up?
Yeah,
okay.
That's important too.
One of the major ways, the biggest reason the Houston Chronicle was able to put out the disinformation or put out the idea that maybe he was a fake CIA agent was because there is a man named Alan Primmel, and he's about 32 years old, and he lives near Houston. He has never worked in the intelligence community before, and he's been a UPS driver, correct? He's been a UPS driver, and he had... he's going to court. He stole something from FedEx or cell phone CDs when he was working for UPS. I'm not sure, but he was.
Maybe iPods or something.
It was something really, really stupid. But this, and you can still find all of this information if you go home and look for it. But this Alan Primmel character, a month and a half, 2 months before the assassination of Carnaby, he actually outed Carnaby on the internet, and he had started creating all of these stories that he himself was a CIA agent. But the stuff he was putting out there about himself was obviously so fake that they were able to say, he can't be real if he's with this guy. He's obviously not real. This guy is 32 years old. He claims to have worked for the DIA, the FBI, and the CIA by the time he was 32. He said he himself was responsible for killing Shamil Basayev, who was a Chechen leader, but he said he did it in the Balkans. He said he was an Osama bin Laden expert. It's all of his complete crap. He made up medals, intelligence awards that don't even exist, but yet he had received two of them. So the stuff that was out there was outrageous.
Why did he out?
Well, they started the disinformation campaign early, but the thing was, he became aware of it because someone that knew Carnaby said, hey, are you aware that it says on the internet, he had always been undercover, that it says you're a CIA agent. This person who knows him said he became irate, and he called up Peter Langley to get them to make him go away and to take that stuff off the internet. Langley never did. Langley never did.
Screwing around and putting on paper credentials. How would he even know that out a CIA guy?
Because they were planning it.
He was an op doing an op to sort of out a guy and create problems.
Primmel also put himself, he actually gained access to the Wikipedia entries for John McLaughlin,
and Robert
Deputy Director for Operations CIA, and Robert Baer.
Well, anybody can get access.
Yes, and around them. But he worked with both of them when he was in the CIA.
Yeah.
So he's using the internet to fill up this the CIA persona. And then, of course, when people Google Carnaby's name, they get this article about Primmel being in business with Carnaby. And Carnaby had already been aware that this guy had shown up on the internet. And
he said that they were writing a book, going on a tour, no such thing.
Yeah, they've been to Barnes & Noble for a book signing that never
He said he assisted in the production of the movie Syriana, no such thing. Robert Baer is like, I do not know who this person is.
Agent or whatever who's gone rogue, and they're trying to pull him. They're trying to cut him down. In other words, he's doing something bad, and the agency is trying to deal with that.
That's the sense.
Something like that. We should be bad at doing.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much.
Well, thank you.